You're listening to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast.
Good morning, everyone, or afternoon, or whatever time zone you're in, because you never really know when you listen to this podcast.
That's true.
Welcome to Your Rivers Are Wrong. I am your humble host for today. I'm Marilyn, and I'm here with another one.
I'm the other one. Hi, my name is Dante. I'm your other co-host.
Exactly. And in this podcast, we talk about the wonderful whimsies of world building, the arts and aesthetics of setting up a setting, and telling stories born from it. Hi, Dante. How are you doing?
Hi, Marla. This was certainly an interesting opener.
It was super normal. Yes.
Do we want to clue them in on what just happened?
Sure. Please elaborate.
Well, we got ready for this podcast, as we do. Merle logs on. I wake up from my bed and simply turn on the computer. Okay. And we were ready to jump into the podcast and start recording. And then suddenly we just weren't. And we were like, it feels a little cold. It feels like...
Yeah, maybe we were just too efficient, you know? We were so ready that we forgot to be like chill about it.
It was like all business. We truly woke up and were like, here are your papers for the morning.
All work, here's no play.
Exactly. So this podcast is starting with about 10 minutes of nonsense lead up.
Yes.
To warm us up for the serious business that is this podcast.
The seriousest of business. Yes, of course. We only talk about serious topics in this podcast.
Absolutely. Yes. Yep.
How's your week been?
It's been good. Surprisingly enough, I watched 2 movies in this past week.
Wow.
Which is 2 more than usual.
Nice.
My sister's usually the moviegoer because she's got that pass that lets you go this amount of times per month.
Oh, yeah. So you have to go an X amount of times and then you have like free movies, basically.
She does that and she watches every movie. And I don't know. I don't usually have time for movies unless it's like something I'm going out with my friends. But this last weekend, she was like, hey, do you want to watch the Mario movie? The tickets are $5 because I have this pass thing. And $5 is a big deal because usually tickets are like $17 to $22.
Yeah, that's
cheap.
Which
is a lot nowadays. Yeah. But, you know, Mario movie was fun. It was like aimed for 8-year-olds, but, you know, me.
I'm the target audience, yes. I was thinking, I have never heard of this in my life. Is it like the Sonic movie, but Mario?
Yeah, it's been like super all over, at least, oh no, now I'm self-conscious that I'm in the nerd space. And I just get exposed to all the
maybe
nerd
I'm
ads.
Not enough in the nerd space, you know? This could go both ways.
But yeah, I've been seeing ads for this for like the past 6 months. And it's literally like made by the same people who make Despicable Me.
Very nice.
It's very colorful and well animated and faithful to the source material. And it was very good. And, you know, I was like, okay, cool. It didn't blow my mind. It didn't change my life. It was very fun.
You know, sometimes you don't need mind-blowing stuff. Sometimes you just need the Mario movie.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm not looking to a movie to like change my life and my worldview.
I don't recommend like trying to find that in the Mario movie, maybe.
No. It will not work.
You know, sometimes you accidentally do, like when the Lego movie turned out to be super great and inspirational, even though it's literally about Lego. But, you know, it doesn't have to be. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be that way. So if the Mario movie is just the Mario movie, totally fine.
Yeah, it certainly had Lego movie vibes in that.
Okay.
It had that better than expected polish on it, you know? Hmm. And the second movie I watched was Suzume. Suzume is made by the same people who made Your Name and Weathering With You.
Did hear of this one. Yeah, that one sounds very cool.
I watched the first two, not realizing that this was the third by the same creator.
Oh.
It's very good. I mean, I feel like the plot gets a little lost on me in terms of like, it's not the most cohesive, I would say. By the way, this is our movie review podcast. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, welcome to our movie review podcast. But is it like art house, hard to understand, or is it just confusing?
There are a couple little plot holes and it was hard to get the direction of certain characters. Mm. I got the vibe and from interviews made by the creator and just watching it that the movie kind of changed directions somewhere in the middle of production. But regardless, I realized that it's a movie more or less targeted towards the Japanese audience because it handles, so to speak, natural disasters. And for them who are very familiar with those and like very attuned to very recent events, the movie hits a lot harder. But for me as a foreigner, good movie. Not my cup of tea.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. That's pretty good. Are you going to like keep up the streak here or is this...
Oh, just keep watching.
Week of movies. Is this a one time only?
Are
you into movies now? Are you a movie nerd now?
Oh, I've always been into movies. I like movies in general, but I'm too lazy to get to the theater and watch.
Fair enough.
I wait till it's very conveniently in front of me.
Or until it's 5 euros.
And then we start watching movies from the 1980s and, you know, catch up on lost time.
Yeah. I love
it. Shout out to
that's great.
The Princess Bride. Anyway, that was my week. How was your week?
How was my week? I'm not sure. I feel like I did pretty good because I can't remember specific things. Like, if it's boring, it's usually good for me. I finally figured out my finances and my taxes with my mom.
Nice.
Because I was like, if you don't come, I won't do it. So please help me out. Sit next to me and say that I have to do it. And then I did it.
Fantastic.
Super boring and uninteresting, but very necessary sometimes.
Mm.
So that's good. And aside from that, not too many crazy things happening, I think.
I find it so interesting that even though you live across the waters, you know, in a whole nother continent, your fiscal year is still very similar to ours in that like taxes must be done in April.
Oh, yeah. But apparently that's a thing. I mean, I guess to take some time after the new year. I don't know. I don't care. Let's not talk about taxes. We're not a movie podcast. We're not a finance podcast.
What?
You tuned in for one and one thing only.
What did we tune in for?
The power of world building and storytelling. Isn't that right?
Sure is. Sure is, Marla. Wow. What a perfect segue into what our podcast is.
Thank you kindly. And actually, since we spoke about movies and the Mario movie in general, I think this is a nice bridge.
What could this possibly be leading to?
Since we're talking about both overused kinds of movies, commercial movies versus arthouse movies, sometimes you just need the Mario movie. I think this leads perfectly into what I want to talk to you about today, which is cliches.
Ah, cliches.
Or, you know, tropes. It's kind of similar. Yeah, I just thought this was an interesting thing since ever since we started this podcast, we've done basically all tropes ever. We've discussed all of them. We're going to keep going. Like, we'll create new ones if necessary, you know? But we've done the pirates episode. We've done the mermaids episode. We've done the, you know, villainous characters episode. We've done all of them. We've done the jealous best friend episode, probably at some point. I can't remember.
Have we done the jealous best friend episode?
We did, like, maybe, like, general friendship episode.
We could write that down, the jealous best friend episode.
Save it for next week, yeah.
I don't know if we've done that one.
Shit, spoilers.
But okay, yes.
So many of the tropes, you know, part of world building and storytelling and part of talking about it is figuring out all the options that we have in building characters, in building layouts, in building worlds, in building stories. Because so many of us humble humans are great storytellers, sometimes we come up with similar stuff. Sometimes your story has a character that kind of feels like a character in my story. Either accidental or not accidental, doesn't really matter. But eventually we sort of end up with a genre of books and movies and series that all have pirates in them. And suddenly it's a cliche. Suddenly it's a trope before you know it. I really like tropes as well. Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have a trope.
No.
I feel like there's a discussion that we should have about either being conscious about using tropes or how much do you need tropes? Is it necessary to change it at all? Is it bad if it's recognizable or if it's a good thing if it's recognizable? Like, there's a lot that ties into this. Yeah. So I think we can fill a nice little podcast episode with cliches here.
Yeah. I'll be totally honest with you. Part of the process of preparing a topic for this podcast is going to tvtropes.com and seeing what other people have talked about. You can look at all of like season 2 and 3, all of those topics that are brought up there. I must have searched on TV Tropes first and been like, okay, what are the core tenets of this specific topic that I absolutely must touch on? And TV Tropes has everything. We're not sponsored by TV Tropes, by the way. It doesn't need sponsorship.
For the uninitiated, please tell us what this actually is.
Oh, TVTropes.com is a website that's existed for a very long time that basically catalogs the most famous uses of any motifs, any themes, any characters that are quite literally tropes that appear over and over and over again in stories throughout time. From literature to movies to TV shows to books to anime and manga to Western comics, it documents everything. So if you look up like a trope that is, what is it? The boomerang joke, I think it's called, where you make a joke very early in a series and it comes back many episodes later.
Oh, yeah.
That is a trope. That's a trope. And regardless of how common it is, it'll list all the examples of when this was used throughout all of media. And it's a fantastic resource and very useful for knowing if your stuff is too cliche or not.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, now we're explaining it. It's also good to mention that tropes do not have to be characters. They don't have to be, you know, genres of sorts. I have to say, I'm guilty of often, you know, thinking of a specific character when I'm thinking of a trope. Mm. But as you say, it can also be a specific way of writing a joke, or it can be the way a plot point's resolved. Even a plot point in itself. I remember like the sort of Chekhov's gun thing. That's a pretty famous one, I think, right? Where you introduce something that's going to be of importance later in a scene, just casually laying around the house, but you shine an extra light on it to sort of note its significance.
Right, right.
So I'm wondering, very often in storytelling, whether we want it or not, we almost always seem to end up in a sort of familiar place. It's very hard to be original, right? This is a classic discussion.
Mm.
Are you very conscious about it when you storytell or world build? Or are you just sort of going with what works and seeing wherever you end up and whatever that is, that's what it is?
Well, yeah. When I plan games to run for my friends, this is, of course, in the context of tabletop RPGs, where I, as the storyteller or game master, have to kind of cook up a story for my players to experience as their characters. I always try to aim for something that is, at the very least, surprising. I think the goal is to kind of catch them off guard and have them experience something that they haven't experienced. So the process of playing a tabletop RPG is to, very loosely, very generally, to make a memory, to create a story that they haven't experienced before that is unfamiliar and exciting because it is unfamiliar, right? So in this day and age, in the modern world of the internet, it's very hard to surprise people.
Yeah.
To take in a number of movies and books that people have taken in and use that in the context of forging a story for them, very often you'll have to lean into cliches and tropes because, which we were eventually going to touch on in this podcast, that they're tried and true for a reason. They're cliches for a reason. People enjoy seeing them. They enjoy when they happen. They evoke a certain feeling or emotion when experienced that is ideal to storytelling. We talked about this a little bit in the dragons episode, where dragons have certain traits that people have come to expect. Wings, teeth, fire, a hoard of money. So when I bring a dragon into the story, my players are not surprised, so to speak, but they are excited because of all of the things that a dragon brings forth or encourages. They sense a sense of adventure from the situation, a sense of danger. And although those are, so to speak, cliche to fight a dragon in a Dungeons and Dragons game, that's not a bad thing, right? So for that question specifically, when I world build or when I create a setting, it is encouraged by most game masters or dungeon masters to steal, to take what you have experienced, yes, what you enjoy, what you have enjoyed from what you've taken in throughout your life, all the literature and media you've enjoyed, and take it and put it into your game because there's a reason you enjoyed it, right?
Mm.
It's only theft if you pretend like you invented it. It's only theft if you, yes, if you take your inspiration and say, I came up with this on my own. This is an original idea. Do not steal, right? Otherwise, it's totally fair to have your players go through something that you personally like. Of course, there is an idea of innovation that you have to plug into it to make sure your players aren't like, oh, this is just Indiana Jones. I watched this movie. I know what happens at the end, you know, to keep the concept of surprise when they're playing with them, to forge a new memory, so to speak. If 30 minutes into the game, your players realize you're just playing through Star Wars Episode 4, then then all the surprise is lost.
Yes.
So while you do have to take from things that you enjoy, the cliches that you have experienced and thoroughly like, it's important to keep up that level of suspense and surprise in stories that you're trying to tell. And that's my stance on it.
This is pretty hard to do, right? Where's the line here? I don't think we can or we need to go like super hard into the copyright and authorship discussion here.
George Lucas will not go knocking on your door for it.
I know this specifically from my bachelor in graphic design, where we discussed this quite a lot. The academy that I was studying at really had a big focus on interdisciplinary design. So graphic design would really be taken with a grain of salt, by which I mean you could really do any media or use any discipline if you just had a good conceptual foundation for whatever you were doing, which I loved. But that also instantly brings up the question of how far can you go and what is still design and what's not design. For instance, if I don't have the diploma for a sound designer, can I make sound? Can I design sound? Can I still do that? I remember specifically in our programming lectures and workshops and stuff, like coding specifically, the term of like open source really being a big discussion. Like, would we want every piece of work that we create to be free of use, like to be remixable? Some people are really strict about, no, this is my own and anything, you know, there's a bunch of stuff about patents, copyright, how much is your art your own once you leave it into the world, stuff like that.
Right.
And on the other hand, there's the also very valid argument of what you were saying, like internet culture, which is really prevalent now, where everything is shared, which also means shared knowledge. So you could very easily teach and learn and gain experience because of the fact that everyone shares and is open about their sources and about their creations.
Right, right.
There was a sort of game developed for trying to find an actual solution to a specific cancer treatment that wasn't figured out. And they basically made it open to the public. And there were very specific people that saw it as a sort of gaming challenge. And they figured it out in super quick. If that was never shared, if that research was staying in an exclusive place, that wouldn't have been the case. So there's a lot of back and forth about it, like how much should something be open source? Also, in terms of creativity, when does something start to become something you imitate? And when does something start to be something you create?
Right.
We also in D&D, what you were saying, the fact that you combine other stuff and create something new out of it, or use the framework of another one shot. You use the map of someone else and then change the names into different things to fit in your world. That stuff is what you do as a DM all the time.
Right, 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 right.
And if we're not talking about, you know, any commercial, official streamed gaming like that, it's just sharing your storytelling abilities with the group with which you play the game. I think combining cliches and stuff is really where it starts to get interesting. Before you know it, the trope starts to get hard to recognize or starts to evolve into something else. And that's maybe also where originality happens a little bit.
Yeah, there is a lot to touch on there. Let's talk about it. So there will be a couple of tangents from cliches here, but
yeah, I'm already going like hard into one direction.
I will round back to the topic. And this is actually really interesting from a perspective of an artist like you and a content creator like me, who always deals with inspiration and creating art, so to speak, and how much we're taking and being inspired by other things. So let's get into it. First of all, in the modern era, it's a huge conversation right now, like of the concept of AI, of how much that impacts the free nature of the internet, how much of it is truly free, how much of it is to be used in this explicitly without permission to create works that are quote unquote your own. And when we talk about things like cliches and tropes and being inspired by other works, the real conversation is intent. It's, are you using this to make work that you're claiming as your own to be truly quote unquote original? Or are you labeling your work as purposefully transformative? Transformative is a term that is thrown around quite a lot in the YouTube sphere because there is a difference in the YouTube guidelines of transformative work versus plagiarism, where you can't just take somebody's content.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You're not allowed to repost other people's content because that's pure plagiarism.
Yeah, of course.
But they do allow transformative work. It's the concept that you're taking somebody else's work and transforming it or changing it in a meaningful way that adds value to the original work. So that's how reviews get done. That's how reaction channels work. Basically taking somebody else's content and adding another layer on it to further improve the quality of what was made originally.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the concept of intent, when we talk about AI making quote unquote art, is that used to elevate the original work? Oftentimes, no. And that's what people have problems with. So when we talk about cliches and using cliches in our story, one, we have to talk about the level. Are we marketing this? Are we selling this? Are we advertising this? Is there any point in time when where you're profiting from this concept? And if so, then you have to lay credence to the original work. You can't just take somebody's work and then sell it for your own. There's laws against that. But when it comes down to sharing a story at your table where there's no monetary profit, where there's no where there's no illegal consequence to you making Star Wars B, you know, it's a different world. It's a story with the intent to provide joy and entertainment to a very specific group of people that affects nobody else and has no consequences on anybody else. And for that, take as much as you want. You know, take whatever. If it's truly personal use, and personal use is another term thrown around in the editing sphere. If it's truly personal use and not going to take money from the pockets of anybody else, by all means, lean on things that people enjoy and make a story that people enjoy.
If we're talking about this private gaming, right? That's kind of what it is. D&D is the biggest example of this, of course. I think the fact that it's such a kind of conceptually a little bit of a free space. We talk about D&D a lot as a safe space, which is super true. And I think this is also part of it. So it's not just about safety in terms of opening up, in terms of, you know, feeling the freedom to storytell, feeling the freedom to try out stuff you can't do in real life. It's also specifically for the DM, but basically for everyone on the table. It's a sort of creative freedom. And that's also what something like that, what this remixing, I guess, can bring you. I've talked about this a little bit before, but I feel like it's similar in how I go about singing. A big part of, yeah, I guess learning or growing in singing and vocal techniques and all that stuff, doing harder stuff every time, is basically imitation. So it's basically just continually trying to figure out a song that I can't do for the life of me. And then if you just keep doing it, and if you just try to figure it out, at some point, you'll start to sort of improve either the technique or how close you can get to the original. And just because it's you, because it is your own voice, you will literally not be able to copy because you have a different sound. You have a different timbre to it.
Right.
Because of that, you sort of reshape your instrument a little bit. If I would be only singing opera, I would have a very operatic instrument. You know, that's sort of the technique I would know best, and that's what I would do or what I would be comfortable in. If I then would try to figure out rap, it's hard to do in an operatic system, right?
Sure is.
So you're sort of stretching your muscles there. And that's also how you learn as well. But in terms of storytelling, I think it's similar as well, like imitation and sort of remixing. I think I'm really pro remixing, honestly. If this wouldn't...
we're a pro remixing podcast.
No, but
podcast,
honestly, I'm thinking a little bit out loud right now, right? But if the internet was not the way it was, if I would have been not such a citizen of the internet that I am now, I guess, I don't think I would have had all the hobbies that I would have now. It would be much more limiting to at least the things I could have tried or the knowledge that I could have gained. And that's really something super valuable to me. I think it's nice also to talk a little bit, I don't want to say stigma, but I feel like sometimes there's a bit of a bitter aftertaste, right? The more cliche a movie is, the less we sort of seem to value it as a society. I'm thinking like the Barbie movies or, you know, the Mario movie. We know what it is. It's kind of obvious, maybe, quote unquote. We expect to not learn or gain anything from it except for sort of general entertainment. I don't know. I'm just sort of filling in. But I think that's, yeah, not always the case. I don't know what I want to say about this, but I feel like we should talk about it.
Yeah. By the way, for the record, I liked the Mario movie. Like, I didn't feel like it was a cash grab. I thought it was what I said before. It was transformative. It elevated the original work. What it did is it respected the resources and the references and the history that came before and made something beautiful out of it. And isn't that art in general? The idea of art as a concept is to inspire other people, to bring about certain emotions, certain feelings, to motivate, right? To inspire to do yourself. What we encourage even on this podcast and what many creators have done all throughout time is to look at a piece of art and then break down on a fundamental level, why does this work? What makes this good and why do we enjoy it? To reflect on a movie and retrospectively and be like, why did I like that, right? To evoke those feelings and then to furthermore, second step, be like, can I make something like that? The concept of art is expression and inspiration. It's somebody evoking what they truly value and bringing that forth into the world for other people to experience. And the experience of human man is simply the interaction of one person to another.
Well, dude.
And how that dynamic flows. It's so deep. It's so crazy. And cliches are things that we have collectively either learned or realized that we enjoy, that we like witnessing. And the idea that we don't appreciate things that are too close to something else, where they go too deep into the cliches, is simply because we like surprise and we enjoy the unexpected. And if a movie is predictable all the way through, then you're not utilizing the cliches correctly. There is an expertise that comes with wielding cliches cleverly and creating something that still evokes those same feelings that cliches bring forth, but in an innovative way that surprises as well. And that is that the collective, the mastery of using things that we already know we enjoy and presenting them in fun ways, in surprising ways, is an art form in itself. And that's why we appreciate directors like Everything Everywhere All at Once, where you watch that movie and it's innovative in concept, but it's not like a relationship between two people is a new idea, right? Romance isn't new. Adventure isn't new. Jumping through dimensions has been done 20 times by Marvel movies for decades. So those aren't new concepts, but the way it's wielded, the finesse of the pen when that's written and executed on is good. And we're not saying that movie was devoid of cliches. We can't say that cliches are a bad thing. We can't say the tropes are a bad thing because they work. But it comes down to the wielder of the pen. It comes down to the eye behind the camera.
The combination of certain things that definitely already exist can also create new originality, right? Like, I'm thinking of the Hamilton musical, which is super famous for, well, it's super famous, period, but but for the uninitiated, it's basically a musical about American history, about, what's it called? Treasury Secretary? Alexander Hamilton. But in hip hop form, with mostly people of color in the main characters. And that's all not really new. Like, hip hop exists and American history is a thing. It's literally history. But the combination of it creates the sort of originality or the sort of surprise that we're looking for. Sometimes it really hits the spark so much that it inspires a bunch of other stuff as well. This reminds me of how genres in books very often work as well. Like, if one novel is original because it's a dystopian novel, then the years after, everything's going to be dystopia. Or, you know, The Fault in Our Stars with a cancer story at the center of it, or like a hospital romance, then a bunch of other books are going to do it too.
Hospital romance.
Because it works. And those books are going to be nice as well, even though they weren't the first ones, right? It's kind of how trends work and how genres sort of start developing. I mean, I feel like we could talk about this forever. I didn't realize how intense this one would be, honestly. We got all angles of this.
Yeah, I think this topic is very close to home. I think both of us wrestle with this very, very often. I constantly have the conversation with myself. Okay, I'm making this video. It's going to be about this. How do I make this in a way that is innovative, that is true to me, that reflects on me as a person, as an artist, as a creator, that is different from all the ways it's already been done? You know, and it's iteration and reiteration and over and over and over again until I feel like I've created something that's truly original. And that's the process, right? We can lean on cliches. Obviously, the thumbnail and the title have to lean on something that people enjoy, have to tap into a trope that they know they're going to like when they watch the video. But how do I meet those expectations and then subvert or exceed them? And that's part of the process. And it goes the same with you as an artist. When you create things, obviously, you're not looking to just make somebody else's thing, but like a different color. Like, there's more levels to it.
It's a pretty hard path to walk as well. Like, where do you start and where do you end up is also something that you can learn. It takes a few years before you figure it out or what you prefer for your own craft. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that about it.
Yeah. Good topic.
This could stretch for like many episodes if we
stop. You really fired us
up. Yeah. I didn't realize, but this is great. I love how we got into all the beautiful things.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we don't have 3 hours for this podcast. Let's not like do that to you.
Well, we do, but you'd hate it.
Well, let's not try to sell this, because what if we then have to make 3-hour episodes? That's going to be a big chunk.
I'm not editing a 3-hour episode.
I can't do it. I have a hard time editing like the regular podcast. Okay.
Well, let's save ourselves and move forward.
But before we finish off this episode, there's this one thing that we do, which is a prompt every week. One of us, in this case me, because I'm hosting, is giving the other one a prompt related to the theme. Or I guess that doesn't have to be the case, but somehow we always end up there.
It's me, the other one.
Dante has never heard this before, and he's trying to figure it out, create a story out of it. And for this week, since we're talking about cliches, of course, I would like you to create the most unoriginal character you can imagine.
Oh my gosh. I need a setting. You can't just give me the most unoriginal character.
Okay.
Give me like an era, a space, a time.
Okay. This is, interesting. This is a spaceship. It's not a spaceship.
A spaceship.
And I want the most generic spaceship resident you could possibly think of.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, space westerns is not my forte, but I will certainly try. Okay. Well, give me a couple seconds to ponder on this and I'll get it there.
Of course. It's maybe good that it's not your forte, because then you only know the cliches and not the original, sorts.
Now, my brain is like, be transformative about this, but my head is like, that's against the concept.
Yes. No transformative powers here.
And people will judge me on which space fantasy I'll be leaning more heavily on.
That's true.
Because there's explicitly two and a couple of things right behind it. But it's like, oh, he knows this one better than the other one.
Yep, this is going to say a lot about you.
Is it? It'll say a lot about how I don't know things.
Fair enough, yeah.
Okay. Key in. Wide shot. We see the dark expanse of space. Plenty of stars and galaxies and a specific blip of light in the distance that we will certainly reference to in a later episode of the season. Zooming in. Crashing through an asteroid belt. fires coming off of their intergalactic vessel. You hear the sounds of alarms, the red blaring of lights, vroom, 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 because that hasn't changed. Even in an intergalactic spaceship, we still have the same red alarms yes, that we do course. On Earth.
Classic.
We see a number of people rushing around in white slash black slash gray costumes, accented by more important characters in red slash yellow slash blue costumes.
Yes.
You can tell the most important people are the people who don't have helmets on because they have beautiful faces and were hired for this gig. And they're rushing
relevant
around
details, yes.
speaking very specifically one other language that is not English. And no other languages at all. But we zoom into the main control bay. What is the word here?
Yes, sure.
The main office of the main spaceship
office, yes.
You can hear in the far distance an orchestra full of heavy brass. As the music kicks in, you hear the doot in the distance that hints on medieval influence, but you're going to underlay it with the soft key tones of a lead piano. somewhere in the far distance, right? And then we pan across screens of indistinguishable panels of languages, specifically one other language that is not English, mm-hmm. that we cannot understand on these floating, levitating, obviously like pass through holographic screens.
Of course, yes.
Of displays of this burning spaceship. One section will be highlighted specifically in red to note that it is injured. Injured. That is going to be the word I lean on here. You're going to see someone scream out, Captain, the side of the ship that I've named in an explicitly spaceshipy name is damaged. The shields are down. We're at, number here, 64%. And the captain, the white male, brown-haired, six-foot
yes.
individual with beautiful blue eyes,
yes.
turns around in his chair and says something smart, something intelligible to go fix it. Someone from the other side, the dark-haired, a little more mysterious Lancer-type character says, I don't agree with that decision, Captain, because I'm tapping into my super special alien knowledge. That is not just a normal asteroid. That is a monster of a name that is also something that we haven't explained to the audience yet. The room gasps and turns. Surely it cannot be monster that we've explicitly named for this show. He says, no, I recognize it from my childhood. But this is only the intro to episode one. We will not delve into that right now. But this is how we address it. Captain, you have to go to damaged area in back of spaceship to solve this. I can't back you up. I'll man the controls while you're gone and subtly imply that I want to be captain in your absence, but not right now. Bring the other person, preferably somebody who is probably some sort of Asian who knows how to use weapons.
Yeah.
Bring him with you. He is the weapons expert of martial combat.
Famous Asian weapon experts in any spaceship. Yes.
In a space fantasy. Bring him. In a world that we have laser guns, bring the guy who knows how to use a sword.
Yes.
And the captain turns around dashingly. The camera catches his perfect angle of his chiseled jaw. And he says, yes, let's go solve this. And he says that in a nice, quippy, humorous way, you know, in a way that endears people to him. In the same way that mm-hmm. in the same way that Leo DiCaprio captures people in the first three lines of his
yes.
of his opening intros. Yes. They go running through the red alarms that are very much Earth similar, continue to blare in the distance. We color them red to know that they're dangerous. Yeah. They run through these hallways, introducing us to parts of the spaceship we haven't yet seen. But because it's a hallway, we know that the ship is big. And we're running through. People are screaming. There are a strange amount of humans on this set, even though this is a space fantasy. And theoretically, we should be entirely outnumbered by proper aliens. But because we've hired a number of human people for this production, and we specifically can't hire many alien people,
yes.
of which their prop design is very expensive, we will simply color some of these humans blue or green or put some tentacles
very
on their
efficient,
foreheads.
Very efficient, yes.
And they'll continue talking this one other language that we cannot understand, but we will certainly name some other time in this series. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They run to the damaged area, and sure enough, it is not simply the damage of an asteroid belt. But peering from the window, because they have windows on a spaceship, which is, you know, fair enough. It's fair enough to have windows on a spaceship, but I feel like a place that's damaged shouldn't really have windows. It should be like a solid thing. But the window is just big enough to see an ominous creature on the other side, partially obscured by the side of the spaceship because we don't want to ruin the mystery of the monster. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right?
Of course, yes.
The captain pulls out his ray gun, which he weirdly didn't give to Sword Guy.
Yeah.
And he says, let's handle this. They suit up in this very cool uniform that they clearly only have three or four of on the set. But they only need two.
Definitely not
for
enough for all the crew that they obviously have. Yes.
They clearly should have brought more people to this, but they didn't because they don't have enough money for more costumes.
And because the captain is the most capable person on the ship, apparently.
Captain's the most capable person. Yeah, they put on the big old round helmet because they haven't invented the different helmets yet. Nah. And they go outside and fly into this astral expanse. And there, on the side of the ship, they can see this massive monster. Lots of limbs, lots of eyes, gnarly. You can tell they've spent a good amount of the VFX budget of the episode on this specific monster. And it growls at them. It speaks an incomprehensible screech. And the dashing hero, who doesn't take time to know the language of monsters, fires away, biao, 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 blast, 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 flies to the side, flies backwards, when in theory, an extraterrestrial monster should be able to just navigate space and destroy him. Like, there shouldn't be a fight. It should be, like, absolutely, he should be demolished. But the deft navigation of the dashing hero in a slow-moving astral expanse is just barely enough to quell the monster, to destroy this alien. And as it cries out, you can hear it speaks two words in this foreign language that they haven't labeled yet. And the hero flashes back to his backstory and remembers the crumbling of his planet and the disastrous mess that turned his hometown into rubble, which is probably Earth, because it's a point of reference that people
we don't know any other
can relate
planets.
To. We can relate to this. Uh-huh. We can relate to this.
Yeah, of course.
Pulled from his planet to this spaceship to live a life entirely separate. And he hears these words he heard when he was so young. And he says, that's part of my backstory. Let's learn more about this monster. Salvage it. And they dive after the burning monster, rip off a piece of its skin, and bring it back onto the ship where the crew does not celebrate him because this is just one more day in a long log of heroic capers on the ship. Mm-hmm. That is no longer burning, that can continue through space perfectly fine, because they need the ship to survive for 12 more episodes. And that is overly generic space fantasy.
Amazing. So generic. You did so great. It's like one of those girl magazines where you can fill in the nouns and stuff. It's basically this. I love it. Also, I love, by the way, as you were talking, I love how all the monsters are basically also aliens, right? Like, I never thought about this. In space, but like, why do we consider that a monster at all if there's like aliens all the time? It's still so human-centric,
right?
So this was like well fit for that troubling idea.
Thank you
that humans are the most important things in the world. Amazing. I love it.
Cool. I'm glad really tapped into everything I learned from TV tropes, so let it be.
And if nothing else, you know, isn't that how you should world build? If all else fails, just go to TV tropes, just click on a thing and make a story based on the trope. This was engaging as hell. It's kind of the point, don't you think?
Sure is. Yeah, you fall into, we call it, it's a TV trope hole for a reason. You click on one link and you just dive. You just go.
The hyperlink labyrinth is real. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you have any cool TV trope that you wish to share, any loopholes we don't know about, any cool hyperlinks that we should definitely like obsess over, please share them with us because, you know, we have a Gmail. yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Please share them with us. Also, very soon, we're going to have an episode. What episode is this, actually? Is this 53? 54.
This is 54.
So next episode is going to be a prompt episode, no?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Next episode is fan prompts.
That's so
fast. We're
going
to outsource our prompts to my YouTube and our Twitter and our Gmail. So anything you send to us, we'll probably see. So please send your ideas. If not for this coming episode, then the next one, we save them up and we use them as we will. So
we're going to tackle a bunch of them. It's going to be super fun. We did a bunch of them already and it's always beautiful chaos. So please tune in for the next one. And there's this one thing that we still need to discuss at some point, which we somehow never do,
right?
But I'm still optimistic about it. Can you remind us what that is again, please?
Yeah, I think we've pinned it for a later episode, and this is definitely not a running gag that we've done for multiple.
No,
this is not a cliche.
This is an original.
On.
Yeah,
we would never lean on the
That's
same joke we've used.
That's also why
for the
you definitely
past.
Don't recognize whatever we're gonna say in that, like in a minute.
53 episodes. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure we plan to talk about how your rivers are wrong.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But not today. Not this episode. Hmm. Definitely not this episode.
Okay. Cool. Good to know.
Good to know.
We'll get to it eventually.
Definitely.
Will we?
Yeah. But,
yeah, we will.
But until we do, have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful week.
Yes.
It is so nice to have you here.
Thanks for listening, guys. And we'll see you in the next one.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have any thoughts for topics, prompts, or if you just want to share your thoughts, you can reach us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. That's yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Big thank you goes to Martin Skelligans for our intro and outro music. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We hope to catch you at our next episode. Have a good one.